Welcome, listeners, to another live episode of Patheia Radio Talk Show, brought to you via findingvoicesradio.com. My name is Johan Oldenkamp. I am the host of this radio show. And the guest of this episode of July 8, 2015, because that's the date of today, has been a guest twice already on Patheia Radio. His name is Ole Demmengaard. Ole, please welcome into the show.
Thank you so much, Johan. It's a real pleasure.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure too for me because, you are an excellent researcher to my opinion, and you always have very interesting lights to shine on things. That's also the name of your website, Light on Conspiracies. But you shine your light not only on conspiracies, but actually also on what is going on really in this crazy world we live in. Maybe just a few words about yourself, Ola, for people who didn't listen to the previous episodes that you were a guest of Patheia Radio.
Well, I'm an author and a researcher, a former journalist that has spent some 30 years of my life trying to expose what is actually going on, and is specializing in assassinations, false flag operations, so-called terror acts, and so on, trying to expose the patterns and the forces that are behind them. Because according to my research, we do not live in a crazy world. We live in a beautiful, beautiful world, but it's being terrorized by a very small group of power-mad people. They are not very many, but they're behind so incredibly much of the mayhem that is going on at the moment. So this is why I'm putting myself on the line and doing everything I can to expose this, and also to expose the patterns and the templates and the methods they're using, so that normal people can become aware of them and not buy into the fear-mongering that is their tool to control humanity.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you for correcting me. Of course, we live in a beautiful, we live in paradise, but the paradise is hijacked, so I understand what you're saying. Yeah, what I like about your work, Ole, is that you you uncover the patterns that are there. And because those patterns are so crystal clear, it has to be organized really well. And that is, I think, key in your research. And the moment people start to realize that everything is organized that well, a little bit of an idea what we are dealing with here, because it's not just a lone crazy man. They don't exist. It's all really well planned and very, very carefully organized. So take off the way you want, Ola.
No, I would say that living in this world, it's almost like living in a David Copperfield show. You think you see there's this man on the scene, and he does things, and it's absolutely magical, and you believe that it's magic, instead of understanding that there's actually something totally going on right in front of your eyes, but you can't see it. But my intention is to expose the methods that these people behind the scenes are using, so that we start seeing that, oh my God, check it out. Once you start seeing how a trick is done, or a false flag operation, or whatever it is, once you start seeing the ingredients and how it's carried out, the second you understand it, boom, the magic is gone, and you will not buy into it the next time they try to push it onto you. And I think we're at a point in human history where the people behind the scenes, or this group that are behind the so-called New World Order, they're getting very, very desperate, because we are aiming the spotlight right at them, trying everything we can to expose them. And this is why they're speeding up all of these false flag operations and so-called terror acts and so on, to try and through fear get us into a spot where they can totally control us and take over. But in my opinion, it's not going to happen, because we're too far down the road. And I think what we're seeing are very desperate attempts by this group. And this is also why, due to them being desperate, that these things are carried out quite sloppily nowadays. So it's getting easier and easier to look through them.
Okay, great. So what we're going to do in this episode is we're going to spoil the tricks of the illusionists, and Maybe we could start with Operation 40. I think it was created in during the Cuba crisis, and the CIA came up with a very sinister plan. What can you tell about the start of Operation 40 and how it evolved?
Well, the reason why I focus so much of my attention on Operation 40 is that this group has been very central in so many world events behind the scenes from the late 50s all the way almost up until today. The same core group of assassins that have been used again and again, flown globally from one place to the other, put together in different teams to take out people, to take out witnesses, to kill journalists, scientists, you name it. And so if I go into a little history or background, how this group was created, maybe it's easier to understand. And it, just like you say, it was just at the time around the Cuban Missile Crisis, when in the early 60s, late 50s, President Dwight Eisenhower and his advisors and people around him came up with the idea of creating an ultra-secret hit team of top assassins that could be sent globally and take out whoever they had problems with. So the task was given to Vice President Richard Nixon to create what was called Operation 40. What he did was that he got hold of some old wolves from the CIA. There was E. Howard Hunt, later world famous from the Watergate burglary. He was also deeply involved in the JFK assassination. There was another man called Ted Shackley, the butcher from Saigon. He was very central in the JFK and extremely central in the Vietnam War, Operation Phoenix there, which was a mass extinction program where they killed about 20,000 Vietnamese people. He was very central in many assassinations around the globe and later became the head of the Western Hemisphere for covert operations. And the man that he took over from was his colleague in Operation 40. His name was David Attlee Phillips. And he was also a big player in so many of these things. And in addition, he was also the CIA controller of Lee Harvey Oswald, the man that was blamed for the JFK assassination. But in my humble opinion, totally innocent. On the contrary, a real American hero who did everything he could to stop the assassination and paid for it with giving up his life. But anyway, these three CIA veterans, they went down to Miami, to JM Wave, it was called in Miami, the biggest CIA installation in the world at that time. And they started recruiting mostly exiled Cubans that had escaped from Cuba when Fidel Castro took over. And what they did was they ended up with a team of about 80 people, one woman, 80, and about 80 men. And out of this group, about 20 of them were specially trained in all types of assassinations, including explosives, poisons, bazookas, you name it, whatever could kill someone, they were trained in it. And they had camps in Louisiana, north of Lake Pontchartrain. They had camps in Nokia's in Miami, Florida, south of Miami, and also in Guatemala, where they were trained and so on. Their first task was to take out Fidel Castro. But then when suddenly, after the Cuban Missile Crisis, when Kennedy was extremely close, he was really pushed by the whole military industrial complex to start the Third World War. But at that point, where he was almost sitting with his finger on the button that could have started this nuclear incredible disaster for humanity, he said, "I refuse to be the one who does it." And it's almost like that was the turning point in his life, where he suddenly saw the magnitude of madness that he was involved in. And after that, he suddenly went in a very different direction and became a major threat for the mafia, the CIA. He wanted to pull out of Vietnam. That hadn't really started on the American part. He wanted to get out of the grip of the Federal Reserve Bank, which is a super criminal institution, and many other things that made so many people around him extremely upset. So what they decided was to aim Operation 40, this cannon, this very lethal cannon, at JFK instead. So they took it away from Castro and aimed it at JFK. And when you look at the JFK assassination, so many of the shooters, spotters, and people involved in the assassination was taken directly from Operation 40. The killing itself of JFK was a combination of people from the mob, the Chicago, Louisiana, Miami mob, but also the CIA core, rogue elements, I would say, from the CIA, the Secret Service. You had Dallas police, you had the whole military industrial complex, part of that, oil tycoons in Texas and so on. So it was a massive big power structure behind this assassination. But after they managed to take out JFK in, I would say, the best conspiracy combined assassination ever carried out, these people almost became like legends and in the world of assassins. And since that day, they were combined in different teams and started to be used on a major scale. So members from this Operation 40 that was in Dealey Plaza when JFK was assassinated was also in Ambassador Hotel 68 when his brother Robert Kennedy was assassinated. There was especially the man I'm talking about now, his name was David Morales. He was also the guy who went down together with another member from Operation 40, Felix Rodriguez, down to Bolivia, where they tracked down and murdered Che Guevara, which was a friend and colleague of Castro's. And the man who actually, the man who ordered the killing was Felix Rodriguez, who still to this very day is carrying his wristwatch. And the man who murdered him was David Morales. They were also very central in many of the military coups in Latin America during the late 60s and 70s. They were part of the overtaken murder of Salvador Allende in Chile on 9/11/1973. They were part of Operation Condor, which was a very organized killing spree of assassinating any lefties that was supporters of Allende and problem makers. They were also part of training these different military juntas and their police and military forces in everything from assassinations to torture methods to interrogation and so on. Very, very brutal people. They were also, behind the car bomb that blew off Orlando Letier in Washington, D.C. on Embassy Road, which was the biggest national terror hit before 9/11 in the U.S. And the same members were also in South Africa taking out a politician down there, a very important man called Robert Smith. And the same people, or people from Operation 40, was also on site in 1986 when Olof Palme was killed in Sweden. And it just goes on and on. So this is why I think this group is extremely important to expose, because if we can connect the dots through them, it will go like a red thread and pull so many of these things together so that we will get a better understanding what happened, who did it, and who was behind it, because it's the same people that gave the orders and control this group. So this is what I aim to expose.
Yeah, thank you for that. Are you familiar with the movies of Jason Bourne, the spectacular Hollywood productions?
Yeah.
Yeah. maybe I'm surprising you with this question. But is there a kind of resemblance there between what really happened in Operation 14 and the so-called program that Jason Bourne was in? Or is it?
I don't know if it's the same. I wouldn't say it's the same program, but the type of person, the type of build up of many different multiple identities. You know, they have like what they call wet identities, and that are used by several different people. and just fake identities as well, where so many of these, when they've been around the world carrying these things out, they have been carrying like 5, 6, 8, 10 different passports, identities, driver's license, all of these things, just like Jason Bourne, and been helped in and out of countries on diplomatic papers, you know, backed up, and every time, or most of the times, through spies in the American embassy in whatever country they were hitting someone, they were supported and backed up by from there. So there are many similarities, even though I wouldn't say that Jason Bourne is taken. It's a totally made up identity, Bourne identity, but it's there are many similarities, I would say.
Yes, that's what I'm aiming at, of course, because I think they try to hide things right in front of our nose in plain daylight, so to say. So that
I would say,
yeah, sorry.
I would say when you get into this area, reality beats fiction. I mean, when you see things on film, I tell you many times what actually happened in real life are even more extreme. You know, because sometimes it's so off the wall that if you show it in a film, you would just shake your head. You know, like for instance, I think it was the year 2000 when Fidel Castro was supposed to, or he was given a speech at the UN building in New York, United Nations building, and one of these guys, I think it was Luis Posada Carrillas, also called El Bambi, he and some other people fired a bazooka at the tower but missed it. I mean, things like that, it would just look stupid in a film because it's just so totally out. Well, what can I say? It's just, it would just say, come on, nobody would do a thing like that. But yeah, they did. And they blew up the airplanes. They've been extremely, extremely active and late in years as well. One of the people, Frank Fiorino, Fiorini, also called Frank Sturgis, he changed his name. He was one of the shooters in Dealey Plaza. He was also one of the Watergate burglars because the Watergate burglary was there to cover up. They were trying to cover, get rid of the evidence that showed Richard Nixon's involvement in the assassination. And Frank Sturgis he spent his whole life as a mercenary and soldier of fortune trying to carry both, and many of them were in Angola, Mozambique, these countries as well in Africa. But the most important of it all is that the paymaster for this one was George Herbert Walker Bush. That is George Bush Sr. He was the paymaster. He was the one that funneled this group of assassins from a very young age. And this group has followed him through his whole career. So you will see that many of these people that used to be assassins were later his assistants, his advisors. They were in the White House together with him. And when his son, Boy George, took over, the director of the CIA that was appointed was actually a member of Operation 40 as well. So, and they pop up around 9/11. It just goes on and on and on. And every time when one of them has been put in jail, for instance, Luis Posada Carrillas, he was put away, and also Orlando Bosch, that was also called Dr. Death, who was involved in hundreds of bomb terror attacks and killings and so on. When they were finally put away, they were pardoned by whom? President George Herbert Walker Bush. Every time they've been put away, then Bush has got them out again.
And so, the fake society that that they are ruling. I think when I would be
totally, they have no respect.
No, but they can get away with anything they pull off. So
they have absolutely no respect for us, and I don't think really we deserve this respect either, because we have been so asleep for so many years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but why can they pull it off? Why can they pull it off? Because we are so gullible. This is the thing. If we had been alert from the start, just say, whoop, let's stop this, let's expose it. As soon as they started, it would have stopped right away. But we have been buying into it again and again and again and again and again. We've been so naive and not being able to see that these things are connected. So I think we carry the responsibility of this, but we also carry the responsibility to stop it, you know, because so much suffering and death and destruction are connected to this power structure. So we need to stop it, really, really.
Yeah, and that starts by exposing it, like you do. You were
because
also...
some of these guys are still alive. It's incredible.
Yeah, I know. The Bush terror family still has a few members walking on this planet as well. So it's time that we take action. But first, we need to open the eyes of the majority, because they have no idea that these thugs are among us, and that they are putting the strings, and that they can get away with all kinds of monstrous actions. You were also in the Open Mind Conference in Amsterdam, Ole, if I'm correct.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It was a great experience, I must say.
Yeah. What was the topic of your speech, and can you tell me a little bit? What your experience was at that conference?
It was a very strange experience in one way, because I and other people that were involved had done interviews about the Holocaust. I'd done one on Red Eyes Creations, and not because I'm an expert in the Holocaust, but because the Holocaust is being used as a weapon. You know, so as soon as somebody starts really digging into anything around that, you're being hit with this name being anti-Semitic. Or an anti-Semite, instead of that's the only thing in the world you're not allowed to criticize or look into. And once you look into this area with an open mind, it is totally mind-blowing, because the evidence does not match up at all. But the reason why I chose to step forward and be part of opening up this was because in some countries, you are being put in jail just for asking the question. And that is not okay in my world. Do you know, like Voltaire said, if you want to find out who controls you, find out who you're not allowed to criticize. And this is exactly it. So I had done this interview on Red Eyes, and also some of the other speakers were pointing out persons behind 9/11 as Israelis and so on. Not Jews, Israeli member. I mean, we're talking, for me, I don't care, Muslim, Jew, Christian, red, blue, black, whatever you are, if you're a nice person, if you treat people with respect and kindness around you, you're my guy. But if you terrorize and blow up and kill and torture people, I will do everything I can to expose and stop you. So it doesn't matter what group, but anyway, so... Christopher Bolin, Ken O'Keefe, people have been very critical about parts behind 9/11 that is connected to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And we were supposed to meet in this old school in Amsterdam. And apparently I had no idea, but it is in a Jewish neighborhood or near the synagogue or something like that. Whatever happened, but suddenly there was this major thing in Dutch media in Amsterdam, as far as I've been informed, about that this meeting, this Open Mind Conference, had to be stopped because it was anti-Semitic and it was Holocaust deniers and all of these things. But we came there only to talk about, my part of it is talk about compassion, forgiveness, exposure, transparency, the truth, what is going on behind it, but with no violence in my heart or anger or hatred, anything like that. And with the intention of lifting the world, I mean, not adding to the problem. So when it came to a point where the people that owned the old school, they pulled out, but the organizer, a very, very beautiful guy called Willem Feldenhof, he was very cool in the whole situation, and through some friends reorganized. So we just moved to another place, a beautiful place. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, so instead of 2 days in the old school, it all came down to like a 12-hour day in the new place. And this whole thing was carried out beautifully, absolutely in peace and harmony and truth. And it was just a beautiful experience. And the thing was, when this smear campaign started, what I did was I went out to about 50 different radio stations internationally and just pointed out what was going on, that this event was trying to be stopped and why it was being stopped. Because it was quite strange, because none of us were talking about the Holocaust or anything that had to do with Judaism or anything like that. So this attack it came out of the blue. But I thought at the same time it was very interesting, because we were in Amsterdam, which is supposed to be a very open and liberal city where you can do, be, live and say whatever you want, but apparently not so. So, but anyway, I was very happy to take part of it, and it was a great experience.
And was there anybody actually talking at the real conference after it was relocated about the facts and fiction around the Holocaust, or was that no longer in the program?
It was never in the program.
Okay.
Not before, not after, not during. There was nothing about the Holocaust.
So they just created...
This is why this attack was so weird, because it was like, where did that come from? And Christoph Bolin, who was the target for this campaign, he had to fly to Germany and then take the train in from Germany to Holland, because he felt that he would not be let into the country. It was that bad. So really,
yeah,
very strange.
Yeah, then suddenly
very often when you really aim at the truth, for whatever area you aim at, if you, for instance, when I name names of people in these positions or assassins and so on, very often there's like a reaction. They try to stop it. They try to shut you up. They try to get rid of you, but it's just too late. It will not happen.
No, and there are too many. But what I like about your work, Ollie, is you know all these details. You know the names, and you see the connections, and that makes it really interesting. And also gives you a lot of credibility, because why would you invent all those names? That's not really likely. So you only mention names if you're certain about the case, I assume. So I think that's really good. And you will also be a speaker at the Open Mind Conference in Denmark, in Copenhagen, in September. What will be the subject there, Ole?
Yeah. I think it will be something similar about the false flag operation, because it is a tool that they're using on such an up-speeded, rate at the moment. There've been so many of them. But what I found out and what I'm trying to prove is that it's the same group that is almost like a theater group, like a tour of terror, that with background actors, actors, directors, military advisors, public relations, makeup artists, all of these things that are being transported from country to country in NATO or army planes, carrying out these everything from Charlie Hebdo to Ottawa to Copenhagen to the Sydney siege and so on, that we are seeing running around in SWAT team uniforms, different countries, same background actors, same people behind the whole thing, which gives me great hope, because then once again, we're not looking at a totally mad world filled with crazy terrorists that want to blow us up. Instead, we're looking at a small little group that are trying to totally control our mind through fear. And the way they're doing it is through manufactured terrorism that is being pumped out through media. Things nowadays that is not even happening. I mean, we're talking nowadays, many of these are staged events that does not even happen in real life. People are not being killed. It is being played out just like on a film set, but being then pumped out through media as, oh my God, this is so awful, this is so awful. Using the old Roman template, problem, reaction, solution. They secretly create a problem to get the emotional reaction from us, not the reaction with our brain. They don't want our brain to be in control. They want us to get us by emotions. So they aim at children, women, nurses, nuns, these type of things that can get the emotions going. Problem, reaction, get the reaction. The reaction they want is like, oh my God, something needs to be done. I need protection. Help me, help me. And then boom, in comes their agenda, their solution. A solution that we would never, ever have accepted had it not been for the problem that we are not aware of, that they created. So they're actually doing these, it's like a play being played out right in front of our eyes, but we are part of it because they manipulate us. So nowadays you can almost see it happen right in front of you on the TV screen. Something happens or is said to happen. They go there, the reporter goes there, oh, it's so awful, it's so awful. They interview somebody on site. Many times the person they interview is part of the operation. So they will feed you details, oh, it was so awful, they were like wild animals, they were chopping their head off, or whatever, to get the reaction from us, oh my God, the Muslims, the terrorists, they're awful, 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 the reaction they want. And then the reporter himself, within like 20, 30 seconds, will give you the solution, their agenda. We need stricter gun control. We need security on the airports. We need more security on schools. We need this, they will say, so that you will just sit there and be fed terror, oh my God, the reaction, and then the agenda, and then you will say, oh yeah, that's really good, that's really good, we need more gun control, we need more of this, we need, and that will then make the door open for them so that they can just move forward this massive, very violent, very brutal control machine that is backed up with military force, police force, turning this beautiful place into a super police state that with surveillance everywhere. I mean, welcome to 1984 times 40. It is, we're in cyber world soon if we don't start waking up here.
Yeah, you're fully right, I think. And the way they play us is, if you see it, it's so, so crystal clear. But the masses are so, yeah, they are so going along with the story, it's hard to believe. But yesterday I was watching the news. Hardly I do that anymore because I get really annoyed. But yesterday I saw that there was a burglary on a military kind of base in France, where they hide, where they took a lot of explosives and other stuff. And I'm not sure if you saw that news as well, but they immediately brought back the story of Charlie Hebdo trying to somehow rub that in again. And I was so amused by the way they were playing this. It was so fake in my eyes. Have any comment on that, Ola?
It is. I haven't had a TV for the last 10 years. But, okay. It's just like you say, once you start seeing it, once you start understanding that a lot of the so-called news is there designed to play with our minds, to get us in fear mode, to think, oh my God, we're surrounded by terrorism, we're surrounded by crazy Muslims, we're surrounded by mayhem, we need protection. Then you will start seeing that they will play you from all different directions. So just because it's in the newspaper, I would say no need to believe it. On the contrary, many times doubt it until you can get it confirmed, you know, from different ways. Because I used to be a journalist. I say used to because I am not proud of that title anymore. Very few people are real journalists nowadays. I think people in the alternative media that are doing this type of job, that is what real journalism is about. You know, we shouldn't have to do it. There are people being paid for it. Most of us who are devoting our lives to this, we earn nothing. You know, on the contrary, we put ourselves at risk and doing things that the police should do, and that the the journalism, this to do and all these things, but it's not working at the moment. It's just like you used this beautiful word hijack before, I think, and that is so well put. The system, the media, so many different areas of our lives today have been hijacked, and it's controlled by a very mad and super criminal mind that does not look out for us. They want to just totally screw us on all levels, and even worse than that, they really want to attack us from, you know, health wise our immune system, through GMOs, chemtrails, you name it. The thing is, what most people are not aware of, we are actually at war here. There is an invisible war going on that is a war against humanity, I would say. So it's not to take lightly. It's, it really is a time to stand up and blossom and become who you really are supposed to be. Because this is not a time to take the remote, swap channels, watch another episode of X Factor and order another pizza. This is the time to really find out what's going on, do your part in whatever area you can, because we have a responsibility not only for ourselves, but for our children and so many generations to come, because their agenda is very, very clear. They're not hiding it. It's called the New World Order. You can read Agenda 21 and these things. It's right there in black and white in front of your eyes. You look through what they want to do with this world. Oh, my God. It is. I mean, I can't even describe how scary a world it would be if they got away with it.
Yeah, that's right.
And again, there are so few.
Yeah, you're right.
There are so few. I would say that they can be counted in the thousands, and the rest of us
billions.
Are billions. So really, we shouldn't even have problems like this. We should just laugh and turn away, because they can only do this because we are taking part of it, that we are playing their game for them. So we really need to look ourselves in the mirror, and if we, whatever we do to help and support this awful system, we should stop it right there.
Yes, we do. We have to do that. When you talk about children, when I started this whole project for myself, this whole exposing thing, I did it for my children, but now I am thinking maybe I'm actually doing it for my grandchildren. Because it's going really slow, to my opinion, but we'll see. We'll do whatever we can to make a difference, and gradually we're reaching out to more and more people. I have a question about the plane, the German plane that crashed in the Alps, the French Alps. Have you investigated that, Ola? Have you done some research there?
I have done some not deep research because, like you know, there's so many different incidents all the time here, so it's very hard to focus on. But I would say that there, according to specialists that I've listened to and spoken to, they are talking about that there's this, especially on Boeing planes, that there is like a remote control system that can be installed very, very easily, just as easy as you sort of put a USB stick into a computer. On the exact same way, you can install this remote control system on Boeing's, these massive big planes. And once again, they're said to be there for your protection, so that if somebody hijacks the plane, then from the ground level, people can just hear the pilot, nobody can control the plane, and then it can be safely landed wherever. But if you listen to what is also behind this, would be that whoever wants to can just hijack the plane and take over. And according to specialists that I've looked into these things, they say that I think it's about 22 different accidents the last 5-10 years involving Boeing planes, where very similar things have happened, where these planes have just suddenly lost control and gone straight into enemy territory, or straight into the ground, or straight into whatever. And I would suggest, not that I know for sure, but since the 50s, the CIA and the people behind the global elite, we're talking, when I say the CIA, I actually mean the CIA, MI6, Mossad, and so on, because up on the, down on the street level, they look separated. But the higher up you come in the power pyramid, the global power pyramid, you will see that these so-called intelligence services are connected at the top and very often working very closely together.
Yes, I see that too. I also see a relation with the Jesuits, but please continue.
Yeah. What they created in the 50s was what they called the strategy of tension, that they have a plan to inflict fear and pain into modern society so that we would beg for more and more control, more and more militarized surveillance and protection and so on. And the only way they can do this is by spreading terror. I really, after all of these years, I'm not sure if there is such a thing as a real terrorist, because every single time I really, really look into these so-called terror acts and so on, we're back to the same organization, same power structure behind it, funding it, equipping it, supplying all everything needed, and then sometimes duping people to carry it out for them. But one of the things that not only have they done, you know, like the supermarket shootings or the blowing up of the Bologna train station or the Madrid bombings, 7/7 bombings, Oklahoma City, 9/11. These are the structures behind these events. But also, as far as I've been able to find out, they're behind like football stadium, these awful events where they started like a stampede, where many people have been crushed to death. I also believe that they're behind quite a few of these that have gone off the tracks lately, and also these planes and ferry things, because at the moment they're trying to hit us from everywhere, I would say, and get the fear into our genes. So we will fear as well transportation, you know, trains, boats, airplanes, whatever it is that can make us escape once they've got us into the corner. So I really think that many of these so-called accidents were not accidents, but real acts of terror, that these planes were brought down in cold blood in an awful, awful way.
As a part of a fear-mongering program.
Yeah. But also many times they often do more than one thing at the same, you know, they kill more than one fly in the same hit. So often they put people on the planes that they want to get rid of. So once you start going through the passenger list, you very often find very important key people that have been worked for different secret projects and so on, or patent holders, or people they want to get, you know, just to snuff or rip off or kill. They put them on the plane, get it up in the air, and just right down in the ground. And
yeah.
So they, because plane crashes are a perfect way to hit someone as well, because then you have maybe 200 victims and more or less impossible to find out who was the target for the attack. They love these ones.
Yeah, I know. I think that's also the story behind the Titanic. It was also a hit.
Totally.
Yeah.
The Titanic was an insurance fraud, but they did that as well. It was the sister ship. It was actually not Titanic that went down. It was the sister ship.
Okay.
They changed the names one night because it had been very severely damaged several times. So they couldn't use the ship. So what they did was since Titanic was planned to go across the Atlantic on this massive one, what they did was one night they put the ships next to each other, because they were almost identical. It's only the numbers of windows down on the sides of the ship, and also the propeller was slightly different. But otherwise than that, they're more or less identical. But what they did was they changed the name Titanic to the sister ship, and then she was the one that took off and went down. But it's a massive. We could do a whole show on only the Titanic. But okay. what they also did was they got rid of some enemies to the Federal Bank Reserve, to the setup of that, and they took them out in 1912, just a year before they got this bank off the ground. So once again, they do more than one thing. When they hit, they use as many things to combine to get rid of as many problems as they see it as possible.
Exactly. That's why I was bringing this subject up, because I know about the FET relation here, but I didn't know about the twins ship, so the sister ship. So thank you for adding that. Yeah. So
you can see. Sorry. No, you can see it that when you see the under subway footage, you know, the underwater footage of the wreck, you will see that the number of windows on the side of this ship is not according to the drawings of Titanic. And also the sister ship, unfortunately, I forgot the name of it, Olympic, I think the name was Olympic. She crashed into and destroyed the propeller just before this happened. She was in the harbor, and this captain, the same captain that went down with her, he managed to destroy the propeller. And so they changed it, and the propeller that is down there with the wreck is the propeller that was exchanged. So that alone shows that there was a wrong ship. But it was an event that went totally wrong. It was not at all, as far as I know, intended to kill all of these people. They were the captain was given the order to hit these iceberg, go full speed ahead, hit the iceberg, get the people off the ship, and then she could sink, and they would get the insurance money. At the same time, kill some of the enemies, that, and then it looked like it was an accident. But the idea was that there was a ship not far from the accident site. And this ship was there to come and rescue all the passengers. And the plan was that they were going to fire some light grenades, warning grenades of light grenades from the ship. I think the color they were supposed to fire were blue. And that would be the signal for that other ship to come and rescue the passengers that was on the boat and so on before she went down. But unfortunately, in between the two ships, this was at night, there was another little ship that was there fishing, and they were using some similar flares to get the fish to come closer to the ship. So the supporting ship, the ones that was there on standby, saw these flares from the other ship, but it was the wrong color. And they got very confused and like, what are we going to do? Are we supposed to come or go? So what they did was they just waited and waited for the right color to appear. But they didn't see them. They were too far away. And so they were just waiting there while all these passengers drowned. So absolutely awful.
Oh, that's a horrible story indeed. Yeah, you talk about an iceberg, Ola. I also hear stories about a missile that was launched by a submarine. What do you know about that? Or is that not true according to your research?
This is the first I hear it. I have not heard that before.
Okay, well, yeah, then we'll not speculate. Thanks for sharing that with us. Something completely different. It's not a Monty Python joke here. Are you watching also what's happening in Greece and the Eurozone? And do you have something to comment on that? Are you following that development?
I'm not, but what I do say is that please do not judge the Greek countries by invasion, military invasions, other countries by financial mayhem. And the countries here, I mean, I live in Spain, we've been targeted as well. It's Greece, Spain, Italy, Portugal. These are the ones that they've been aiming at in a certain way. And when you start understanding that the United Nations is part of the New World Order, it's the same power structure, the same families behind the creation of the United Nations, and with the attempt of this massive controls machine as well to take over. So to when when these countries joined the European Union, they had no idea that once again they were being hijacked. This is such a good word, hijacked. And what I think that what they've done in Greece is that they've used that country as a test run, almost to see if we hit a country like this, will we get away with it? Will there be how big will reactions will there be if we close back down the banks? Will we have a revolution if we do this? And very often they have warships on standby around that. That was why they used Cyprus as a test run as well, an island that easily controlled, and just to see how will people react. And if they get away with it, then okay, let's move to the next country and do it there. It's I think, you know, like Sweden, I see that as a test run for digital money. Now there's more or less no real money left in Sweden. You can't use money in the banks anymore. Everything is digital. You go to the marketplace and buy some cabbage. You need a credit card, and they will have one of these things. Even children, when you play Monopoly, there's no money anymore. It's credit cards, the new editions. And they use, I think Sweden is one of these places where they test out high-tech equipment and so on, because the Swedes, I used to live there many, many years, are so afraid of conflicts and so happy as long as they have their gadgets and nice, they look good and they're well-trained and nice clothes, and, you know, then everything is okay. They do not react. They don't stand up and say, this is just way too much, because they don't even see it happening. So I think this is what we see in Greece. And once again, if we don't stop it, it will just go to the next countries. Maybe Spain, Portugal, Italy would be lined up.
Yeah, probably you're right about this. It's a test case to see how far they can go on a scale like this. And another element is maybe also the pull between you can call it Russia and the Eurozone. They both want to get Greece on their side, or keep Greece on their side. So it's an international conflict, I could say. And also the USA is now getting involved into this. But we'll see how it goes.
But this is what they're trying. Their game is conflict. You know, yes. Violence, wars, destruction, conflict is there. They do not want us to be in harmony. They do not want us to live in beautiful relationship with each other. They want us to hate each other. They want us to see each other as enemies. They want us to fear each other. And I say, let's turn it around and do the absolute opposite. You know, let's start be good, do good, help each other, help, you know, in your neighborhood, your friends, your family, people you've never seen before. Spread these type of things to gain power back, because they want you to just sit in front of the box and be fearful and not reach out for anyone. You know, just sit in there and wait until they take over. You know, until you see tanks in the street, just stay there, eat your pizza, don't react. That's their plan. And yeah. I think it's extremely important how we react, that we do not take to violence, that we because that is, they're poking us with a stick. They want us to go the violent way if we react. But I would say, I would go and fearlessly expose instead, you know, totally non-violent, but use the truth. Use the truth and your friends and family's bravery to not bend, but not fight violently. Because if you fight violently, that is their language, and they will just squash us. So it's very important how we deal with this situation, I think.
Yes, I fully agree with you. I've stressed that many times myself. The only thing we should do is play our own game. So create solutions and get off the grid as much as possible, and try to be self-supporting. But never ever use violence, because the system is completely designed to deal with that. So then you give them only more power.
Yeah. Do you know Aikido is a beautiful martial art, I think.
Yes.
And it's so different to karate, where in karate you have a very violent attack and you meet the attacker with violence, two forces that just meet in a massive big clash. But with Aikido, what you do is you keep your focus totally in balance, totally fearless, and observe the enemy. When the so-called enemy attack you, what you do is you just get out of the way, in total balance, get out of the way, and then you redirect the attack into a circular motion. And when you see somebody hit an Aikido master and he just moves out of the way, the guy that hits falls over almost. And what he then does is redirect it into a circular motion so that the person goes down on his own force, but without hurting himself. So it's a beautiful metaphor of how to deal with these very violent forces. Just get out of the way, stay in focus, stay in love, stay in compassion, and just redirect their energy, and they will self-destruct, I think.
Yeah, you know I'm a martial artist myself, eh? And have you ever seen a video of Murahai Ueshiba practicing Aikido?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, many times. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's pure art.
Yeah, but it is pure art, and you think, no, the guy is making it up and so on. But once you try yourself and you try to hit a guy like that, my God, it's just like boom, and you're down. And he's so peaceful and always with a little smile on his face. You know? So it's that's the way to go.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful ending of this episode. We all become Aikido masters, but not only on the dojo, but also in real life, in dealing with information and dealing with everything that's on our way. So thank you very much for sharing that beautiful metaphor here, Ole. Our time is nearly up. Maybe you have a final word to say to the audience.
I would like to say that I'm going to Norway and Sweden now in a few days. I'm going to be there in Norway from the 18th and some days onwards. Then I'm going to be in Stockholm from the 24th to the 26th, where I do guided tours around the site of the assassination of Olof Palme, showing people on location what actually happened. I tell you, it is mind-blowing when you start seeing what's happening compared to the official story. And I've actually been trying to, I'm planning to do something that can almost be called like terror tourism, to go on sites, on location, and debunk the official story on site. You know, go to New York and in New York, show what actually happened around 9/11, Oklahoma City, the Queen's Day in Holland, the killing of Olof Palme, the mass shooting in Norway, the train bombs in Madrid, the 7/7 in London. There's so many of them. But to expose them so that people on site can suddenly see, oh my God, the official story does not match at all. And then you start seeing, oh, here we've been taking for such a ride. It's time to wake up.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a very powerful way to open eyes of people to actually see them. And then nobody can ever fool them. So apart from all the things you're already doing, reporter, investigator, also become a tour guide. And I think that's marvelous. Thank you very much for being my guest. Listeners, we have a next live episode after the holidays. And the first English one is on September the 9th. It's Semir Osmanagic. He's the discoverer of the pyramids in Bosnia. And for the Dutch listeners, on August 26th, there will be the first Dutch show with Duda de Jong about cannabis and the problem with the legal system in this silly country. Thank you for listening, and hope you tune in next time. Same station, same